This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, between 2 and 3 o'clock on this Friday afternoon. Coming up over the next hour, we're going to be talking a little bit about Sheffield Wednesday. It may have been a good start on the field, but they might be in a little bit of trouble off it. So we'll have more of the latest on that as the hour goes along. We'll also be talking a bit about Nottingham Forest, who've made a good start to life under Sabri Lamouchi. And we're going to be talking a little bit also about Leeds United. Another good start to the season, but last season started off pretty well for them and it didn't end particularly well. What might they look to do in January? And how big a moment was it for Patrick Bamford last weekend, scoring his first goal since the end of August? Remember, if you want to get in contact with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so make sure you get in contact with us this afternoon. We're going to start off by talking about Sheffield Wednesday, and they are in a bit of hot water at the moment. And we're going to be talking all things Sheffield Wednesday now. And I'm delighted to say we're joined by Alex Miller, Sheffield Wednesday writer for the Sheffield Star. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Alex. We'll just touch on this and then obviously move on to on-field matters. They could potentially be handed a possible points deduction and a significant fine after being charged with a breach of the Football League's financial rules. Just in a kind of quite a simplistic, which is quite difficult with such a complex subject, but how could this affect Sheffield Wednesday over the coming weeks, not just in terms of a physical way, in terms of a potential points deduction, but also psychologically for the players and the manager? How might it affect them over these coming weeks?
Oh, hi, Kieran. Yeah, it's like anything, I guess. There's when there's stuff going on, you know, off the field, and something as serious as this, you know, the natural question is around the focus of the players and you know, how they are going to manage to stay concerned with things that are going on the field. Knowing a little bit about these players, I mean, watched them since the start of the season. They've already had things to contend with, you know, with the transfer embargo in the summer, change of manager, you know, having to deal with a caretaker manager for part of the season. I think we've all, you know, those of us that do cover Sheffield Wednesday have been really impressed with the focus that they've shown. So hopefully they can take that into what's going on at the minute. I think it's important to stress, of course, that it is at the minute only a charge, and the review will be ongoing. And Sheffield Wednesday have put out a statement saying they're going to, that they've vigorously denied the accusations and they are going to fight it. So, yeah, it's certainly going to be interesting to see what happens, and it's one that potentially could run.
I was about to pick up on that point, Alex, about how good a job actually Sheffield Wednesday are doing, because they are currently sat in 8th place. They're on 25 points, just 3 points off the top 6, considering they started the season without a permanent manager. You mentioned the transfer ban over the summer, this hanging over them as well, that actually it's a pretty remarkable job that they're doing to stay as focused as they are and put themselves in a good position. I always think sometimes going under the radar at this stage of a championship season is actually quite a good thing, and just hovering in and around the playoffs is probably exactly the place you want to be at this stage of the season.
Yeah, I think so. And like I say, it has been highly impressive on how, you know, obviously we speak to the players quite a bit, and you know, their sense of focus and just controlling the controllables, you know, to use the horrible cliche, you know, is something that they talk about as players and with the staff as well. And like you say, they've been doing a great job, it seems, so far. I think the disappointment of the last couple of games that have conceded late goals to essentially, you know, drop 5 points, which would have seen them, you know, looking up at the top 2 places rather than the top 6. And they'll have to rid themselves of the memories and that, and hopefully they'll start with a result away at West Brom. But yeah, I think, you know, other clubs you might look at them and be a little bit more concerned about how this the dark cloud hanging over the club might affect them. But certainly there is a track record there with this group of players that they are able to just focus on what they're doing on the pitch.
Last result then for Sheffield Wednesday was a 2-2 home draw against Swansea last weekend. I think we spoke maybe last week about the importance of winning these types of games, considering Sheffield Wednesday haven't really beaten a big side so far this season, and we were talking about the importance of at home winning a game like this. It was a bit of a crazy game because Swansea took the lead. Sheffield Wednesday then scored two late goals thinking they probably won it, and then Swansea scored again very late on in the 94th minute, I think it was. What was your kind of biggest takeaway from that game? Was that a case of 2 points dropped and a frustration, or actually a reasonably kind of good point against another good side?
You look at it and I think, you know, the Leeds game, which was the previous home game, I think, was another game that maybe Wednesday had the better of the game. They're certainly very strong at Hillsborough, and they had the better of the chances. They were the better team against Swansea. They hit the woodwork three times, which has become something of a frustrating theme for Gary Monk and his boys at the minute. But, yeah, I think, look, you look at it and you say a draw against Leeds, a draw against Swansea, they're not terrible results. But very much the nature of it, you know, they did dominate for a long period. The two goals that they conceded were mistakes, it has to be said, by Kieran Westwood in goal. And going into that last 5 minutes, as they did at Blackburn as well, they took the lead with 7 minutes to go and ended up conceding two goals just around injury time. You know, it was a bit of Groundhog Day about it and particularly frustrating. And like I said before, it's something that they have to rid themselves from. They've had quite a helpful run of fixtures so far. Like I said, they go on to West Brom, and then there is a run of some of the more fancy teams, you know, over the busy Christmas period. So yeah, we'll see what Sheffield Wednesday are made of, particularly with what's going on off the pitch as well over the next few months. But you know, I wrote a piece last week about the fact that they've got more points, more wins, and are higher in the table than they have been over the last 5 years, which includes two seasons under Carlos Carvajal, who, you know, obviously took them to the playoffs. So, yeah, plenty of reasons to be cheerful. But like I say, we'll really see what this Wednesday side are made of over the next couple of months, I think.
What have you been your views, Alex, on Gary Monk? Because he made a really good start, actually, in his first few games. And as it stands, Sheffield Wednesday in a good position. What would you say is the biggest change from Gary Monk to, let's say, Steve Bruce when he was in charge last season? And do you think there's a real positive feeling around not just when he was appointed, but the direction in which he's taking the club at the moment?
Yeah, I think there's a willingness to get on board. You know, Monk said throughout his time that his initial principles that he wanted to instill on the squad were a tougher mentality, which he felt that watching Wednesday from the outside looking in is something that they lacked over the last couple of seasons, and which were obviously ultimately disappointing seasons. And the other thing was to be shore up things at the back. The last two games, notwithstanding, he's absolutely done that, which makes these last two games even more frustrating. Because you know they went into the game at Blackburn as the second best defence in the league. I don't think they'd conceded a goal at home for three or four games. So, yeah, he certainly ticked off two of the boxes. It's the other end that's a slight bit of concern, that they are having these long periods of domination. And that's something that Monk said that he's going to work on. There's been this long-standing sort of link with James Beattie, who he's worked with at clubs before and who's got a very good record of getting the best out of strikers, potentially coming on board as a forwards coach. So, yeah, look, the feeling is amongst the couple of players that we've spoken to and to Monk himself that their look will change going forward. But I know, you know, over the next few days on the training ground down at Middlewood Road, they'll be working on getting things firing up front.
Up next then for Sheffield Wednesday, it's a tough game. They're away at tabletop as West Brom. What's the feeling going into this game? Is it a case of potentially just getting away with a point would be a pretty good one, or is it an opportunity to learn a lot about where the Sheffield Wednesday side is going to be at? Because West Brom have been, in my view, the most consistent of a very inconsistent bunch in the Championship. So it is the toughest game at the moment. So what's the feeling around the club going into what is a pretty big game?
Yeah, I think it's one of positivity and trying to get themselves back on track, and it's certainly a good opportunity to do that. I think if they came away with a win, you know, then all that sort of the misery and disappointment from the last couple of weeks would be, you know, consigned to history. But look, it's one of those games. I think you'd probably look at it and think, you know, if you come away with a point, if you keep a clean sheet, it'd be very impressive indeed. As you say, West Brom have probably been the most impressive of the Championship teams. We've not seen them yet personally, but watching on from afar. It feels like a big game. There's been a run of games really for Wednesday that we've all been saying, this is the game that we'll see, what they're made of, whether they are genuine promotion challenges. One of those was Leeds, the next one was Swansea, and now we're over to West Brom. But they do need to get that monkey off the back and get a win against one of the top teams eventually, because they are so important.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Alex. That was Alex Miller, a Sheffield Wednesday writer for the Sheffield Star. It's been a solid start, good start for Sheffield Wednesday, considering all they've had to deal with off the field and the very fact that they started the season without a permanent manager. Gary Monk came in a little bit of time into the season. He's been doing a good job, but there is this pretty significant sword of Damocles hanging over their heads at the moment. The fact that they could be handed a possible points deduction and a significant fine after being charged with a breach of the Football League's financial rules. We'll have more on that later in the hour. We'll hear the thoughts of football finance expert Kieran Maguire, who spoke to the Breakfast Show earlier. So we'll get more on that later in the hour. A more informed analytical view of the finance aspects of it. So it was a really good interview that the Breakfast team did with Kieran. So we'll hear, not me, but with Kieran Maguire into the intricacies of it. So it's a really fascinating insight into the exact reason as to why they potentially could have this deduction, why this has ended up being this case, and why they could end up facing a possible points deduction, which would be a big blow, but a good start to the season may combat that potential fine. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so we want to hear from you this afternoon. We're going to be continuing going through the championship. As I mentioned, we're going to hear a bit from Kieran Maguire later in the hour as to the ins and outs of this possible points deduction that could be handed down to Sheffield Wednesday. We're also going to talk a little bit about Leeds, who've made another good start of the season. Is this their season, or is it again going to be another case of what if for Leeds United? But up next, we'll be talking all things Nottingham Forest.
Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. So we want to hear from you this afternoon about your championship club. We're going to be talking all things Nottingham Forest now. And I'm delighted to say we are joined by Baz Cooper, journalist for the Nottingham Post. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Baz. If we look at things then generally before specifically, fifth place on 28 points. They do have a game in hand after their postponed game against Reading a few weeks ago. Has this exceeded expectations? Because when Sabri Lamouchi came in, not necessarily a huge amount would have been known about him in a managerial sense, obviously more so playing-wise, but will Nottingham Forest fans be even happier than they expected to be at this stage of the season?
Good afternoon, Kieran. Yeah, I think so. I think that if you'd have offered Forest fans fifth place, 28 points after 15 games at this stage of November, I think the majority would have been exceedingly happy. Now, I think the club is making good progress all over the place, on the pitch, off the pitch. We've had more come out this morning about the proposed redevelopment of the City Ground, which is a positive. The team is winning games on the pitch, and so I think we were talking about this the other day, but expectation is rife at Forest. It's always going to be there. It's always been there, but I think everybody's pleasantly surprised with how quickly the manager and his new players and the existing players have gelled.
When a manager obviously comes into a club, winning games is always a good way of getting fans on side. And I'm sure, Baz, last weekend is a pretty good way of getting yourself loved by the fans. The big game at home against Derby and a 1-0 win thanks to Lewis Grabban's goal. I mean, as a manager, if there's one way you want to get the fans on side, beating your arch rivals is possibly the best way of doing it.
It certainly is. What I would say is that they'd already beaten Derby quite comfortably in the Carabao Cup back in August, albeit with two very different teams to the ones that turned out at the weekend. But, you know, I think that both Philip Cocu and Sabri came into the first game with a lot to prove. Still one or two questions over their longevity, their ability to manage at championship level. But given the team selection in the Carabao Cup, you kind of thought that, hang on, Sabri gets this. He gets the importance of it. Maybe Philip Cocu, not quite so much. And then, you know, the game on Saturday, Forest weren't great in the first half. He had one or two chances. Probably Sami Amiobi with the best of them. And Derby did okay. Samba Bryce, who is certainly up there for a contender of player of the season thus far. He made one or two big saves, certainly in the opening exchanges from Tom Lawrence. That was a key, that proved to be a pivotal moment in the game. But second half, whatever he said to them at half time, he certainly gave them a rocket up the backside, because they were much improved second half. They played with an awful lot of purpose and vigour, something they hadn't done in the first. And although that it got a bit nervy late on, Jack Marriott probably should have scored with a good chance. They would deserve winners based on the way they played in the second half and the way they stamped their authority on the game. And they just got better players for me. Derby have struggled since losing Mount, Wilson, and Fikeo Tomori. They've not quite settled into finding an identity that maybe they did have under Frank Lampard before that. Whereas Forest have very definitely got an identity under Sabri. So, you know, as I mentioned, if he wasn't loved by the fans after the 3-0 victory over Derby in August, he certainly is now.
If you could put your finger, Baz, on the major difference from Nottingham Forest last season under Martin O'Neill to this season under Sabri Amuchi, where would you see the biggest difference, the biggest improvement has made? Because in theory, with that game in hand, Forest could potentially, with a bit of goal difference changing, they could move up to second with that game in hand after the same number of games. So where's been the area where Forest have improved the most from last season?
It's really hard to pinpoint one specific area, to be quite honest with you. Their goalkeeper is... they didn't have a terrible goalkeeper in Kostar Pantilimon. He kept a lot of, I think, 15 clean sheets last season, which is the most for a long, long time. So, you know, the goalkeeper has made a huge difference, Bryce Samba. But I think it's the clarity of thought, moreover, than anything else. Yeah, you can look at... You know, the formation that he's got going, he's got a rejuvenated Ben Watson in the middle of the park. His partner has been changing quite regularly because of injury. He started off with Alpha Semedo. He's had Samba Sow, John Bostock on occasion, and more recently Ryan Yates, owing to injuries to other players. But yeah, if I was forced to pinpoint something, I would think it's the clarity of thought that he's maybe under Ita Karanka first, and because we shouldn't forget that Forest were well in touch with the playoffs when they beat Leeds on New Year's Day comfortably last season, and then Ito left. So, you know, they had a good start to the season, a good half of the season under Ita Karanka last year. Let's not forget that. But maybe Ito and then Martin O'Neill just overcomplicated things, maybe asked too many difficult questions of the players that they've got at their disposal. When you speak to the players, we spoke to Ben Watson on Thursday, and I asked him specifically about Sabri and about the clarity of thought that he gives. He makes everything really simple. He tells the player exactly what he wants from him, what he wants him to do, what he doesn't want him to do, and he seems to have hit on something that seems to be working with his players.
I wanted to get your views on a rather young footballer at Nottingham Forest. He makes us all feel rather old, and that's Brennan Johnson, who's only 18 years old, obviously the son of David Johnson, torn over his eligibility, like his father could play for a number of different sides. How exciting a young talent is he? I mean, I think he came off the bench against Derby last weekend. Where is he at, and how kind of close is he to breaking on a regular basis into the first team?
I think he's very close. You speak to people at Forest, and I had the pleasure of covering the alongside the seniors, covering the under-23s for the last 3 or 4 years quite closely. And so I've seen Brennan's progression through into the, you know, from the youngsters, the 18s into the 23s, and now into the senior first team. And he's very, very highly thought of, possibly, you know, more so than Arvin Appiah was. As we've seen, Arvin Appiah was allowed to leave for Almeria back in the summer for £8 million. I'm not suggesting that Forest wouldn't part with Brennan if a major offer came in over the next year or so, but they rate him highly, and he is knocking on the door of the first team. But, you know, I was with we did a show on the local TV the other night with Charlie McParland, who's a former Forest manager, former Forest coach, been around, you know, the game a long time. I think currently scouts for Aston Villa, and he was saying that he thought that Johnson, you know, could possibly get in the team above Thiago Silva or João Carvalho. I mean, let's be fair, Silva had probably his best game. In fact, he did have his best game against Derby on Saturday, ran the midfield. Carvalho is proving to be somewhat of an enigma. £13 million, not his fault, but we're not getting enough out of him, and haven't got enough out of João Carvalho on a consistent basis since his arrival. So, Carvalho is still young. He's still adapting to life in England, away from home, in a Championship, which is an unforgiving mistress at the best of times. But I certainly think Johnson's got everything. He's got the ability to play off the striker. He goes in behind the central defender. He plays between the lines while he picks the pockets of space. He's very difficult to pick up, and he can score a goal or two as well. And so there's really nothing in his game he hasn't got. For him, it's just about progressing nicely, keep listening to what he's being told, keep working hard on the training pitch, you know the cliches, and keep doing what he's doing. But I dare say that, you know, Sabri certainly values him. What he got out of being shoved on for 5 minutes the other night against Derby is open to anyone's debate. But I would have no. Let's put it this way: at Bristol City a week tomorrow, if whatever Carvalho was unavailable and Thiago Silva was unavailable, I'd have no qualms about starting Brennan in what's a massive game at Ashton Gate.
I saw a couple of links going forward into the January transfer window, linking Matty Cash with a move to Everton for £12 million in January. What can you see Forrest doing in January? I'm assuming it will be a case of making sure that none of the key first team players leave, and also will there be an urge to potentially sign a couple of players, or is it sticking to the squad that they've currently got?
I tell you what, January is shaping up to be absolutely fascinating, because if form continues as it does at the minute, as it looks like, Forest are going to be there or thereabouts, in with a shout of challenging for either the top six or the top, well, the playoff picture or even the top two, which they are at the minute. What does Mr. Marinakis do? Does he gamble and think, right, this is our best shot of promotion in the long time, because it is, the Championship is wide open. Forest won't probably have a better chance for, well, you don't know about next year, but this is, as we are now, what's an opportunity they've got. So this Mr. Marinakis thing, right, okay, great chance, let's gamble, let's try and sign a Dwight Gale, because it's fairly obvious to anybody that Forest are lacking up front in options. Yes, Lewis Graben is their leading striker. Yes, Lewis Graben is on form. He scored 7 times in the Championship. And if he carries on this vein of form, we'll hit 20 goals. However, Forrest are only one suspension away, one knock on the training pitch on a match from losing Lewis Graben. And there you would worry, away from his goals, where that focal point of attack is going to come from. It certainly isn't going to be Rafinha. He's not, you know, with the best one in the world, he isn't going to suddenly come in and fill the breach and start scoring goal after goal after goal. I just, with the greatest respect to the kid, I just don't see it personally. So that leaves them with a problem. They've got Tyler Walker out on loan at Lincoln City, who's scoring well for them and has scored in the Championship before. They've been linked consistently with Lawrence Shanklin from Dundee United up in Scotland. He wouldn't cost a huge amount. I was told the other day that, you know, a bit of £2 or 3 million would see Dundee want to do business, because albeit they're in a strong position in terms of the league, financially not so. And then there's Dwight Gale, a rumour that's been around for a while. What do they do with him? He's on a large salary at Newcastle. Would there be a large loan fee involved? Would they be prepared to gamble on signing Gale guaranteed goals at this level? So it really is fascinating to see what Forest do come January.
And just finally then, Baz, after the international break, a couple of tough away games face Sabri Lamouchi's side. Away at Bristol City, who are right up there, just on the same number of points in a place below Forest. Then to QPR, who are 10th. So a couple of tough away games, and 3 of the next 4 are away from home as well.
Yeah, but I think given Forest's away form so far this season, I would suggest they're quite relishing those opportunities, because the way tactically Forest is set up is I wouldn't say favours playing away, but it's certainly they enjoy playing away from home. The way they set up against Derby, Lewis Graben said this after the game to us, that they set up almost like they were playing away from home. So I think the Bristol City game is a fascinating one, because they're obviously a very, very strong side at home, or are always good at Ashton Gate. Forest tend to struggle there, you know, don't generally get too much there away from a point now and then. And as you say, they're both locked together on 28 points, goal difference, settling them. Both had good wins. You know, Forest beat Derby, Bristol City won away at Cardiff, which proved to be Neil Warnock's final match in South Wales. So that one's going to be fantastic. I can't wait for that one. And then QPR on the Wednesday night down at Loftus Road. I mean, Mark, that's the first time Forest have come up against Mark Warburton. They'll know exactly what they're going to get from a QPR side. You don't need to do too much scouting on a Mark Warburton team, do you really? So they'll know exactly what they're going to get with QPR. I think they'll win at QPR. I think the way that Mark sets his teams up will lend itself to the way that Forest play on the counter, and they'll just pick them off. Bristol City, a completely different kettle of fish, and you take a point right now.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Baz. That was Baz Cooper, a journalist for the Nottingham Post, giving his views on all things Nottingham Forest. They're fifth place in the table at the moment, 28 points, but they do have a game in hand over everyone else. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 70 20 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. Up next, we'll be talking all things Leeds.
This is Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. We're going to be talking all things Leeds now, and I'm delighted to say we are joined by Kevin Markey, editor of the Leeds United Mad website. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Kevin. So, after a 2-1 home win against Blackburn last weekend, it leaves Leeds third on 31 points. They're just 2 points off the top. How would you say the season has started for your boys?
Hi, Kieran. Yeah, it's a fairly steady start, really. If you compare it to last season, we're a point better off than what we were this time last season. So going into a very sort of difficult period now when there's going to be about plenty of games, 10 games, I think, over about 40 days. It's going to be a tough test of our squad and everything like it was last season. But, the second season under Bielsa, fingers crossed, things are going okay. And I think it'll be a big test for us now going forward.
Is that a slight concern in the back of lots of Leeds United fans' minds at the moment that last season started off very well and then it then kind of came to a crashing end towards the end of last season? Or do you actually take the perspective you learn from your experiences in life and you learn more from mistakes, actually, and Leeds will be better off for their experiences last season than worse off?
Yeah, exactly. I think mistakes were made last season, especially leading up to Easter. The Easter games, we didn't really prepare ourselves properly for what happened there, and going into the playoffs, I don't think we were quite ready for that either, to be honest with you. We seemed to be a bit too confident heading towards the playoffs last season, and some of the results didn't really go our way, so I think lessons will have been learned from that. Obviously the players are more experienced now from that lesson. And hopefully with the couple of additions that we made during the summer that we can actually cross the line this season. But it is going to be tough. It's always a tough division to get out of, and no more so than this season.
Must have been a pretty significant moment last weekend for Patrick Bamford. He got his first goal since the end of August. He's been a player that has been quite heavily criticised over the last few months. Leeds fans wanting Eddie Nketiah to get more of a go over Patrick Bamford. But how significant a moment is it for Bamford, not just in terms of getting a goal that helps Leeds win, but for his own personal confidence after a bit of criticism, quite a lot of criticism actually, from certain sections of the Leeds faithful, that he got that goal, gets that monkey off his back, and he's back scoring again?
Yeah, well, as you know, confidence is a big thing in football, and especially for your number nine. I think he's been playing really well, really, without actually scoring any goals, but it took a lot. I mean, it might be funny saying this, but it took a lot of bottle to take that penalty on Saturday, even though he is our number nine and he should be confident. He hadn't scored in 10 games and he seemed so confident on taking the ball and ensuring that he scored the goal. And then a few minutes later, he took a beautiful touch from a Phillips long ball and laid it off for Jack Harrison to make it two. So two sublime moments for him last weekend in that game against Blackburn in that 5-minute period. And hopefully now his confidence will be back up and raring to go, especially with Nketiah doubtful, I think, for another week or two. And ironically, he was set to take his place against QPR the other week, but it wasn't to be. So hopefully he'll get a massive lift now from this and take it into November and December.
Inevitably, at this stage of the season, Kevin, people start looking at January. One of the, I'm sure, players that Leeds will want to keep hold of at least until the end of the season is Ben White. Obviously, he's on loan from Brighton. I believe, from what I've read, that maybe he's played too much for Brighton to be able to recall him now. But how key is it that, at least for the rest of this season, that Leeds keep hold of a player that I know a lot of Leeds fans are kind of high in praise for?
Yeah, Yeah, for me, I think Ben White's been the best player of the season so far. He sort of walked into the team and he hasn't put a foot wrong, really. His defensive ability is really top-notch in this league. And to say that he'd never played in the Championship before, he played for Newport and Peterborough in the lower leagues, really is top-notch. And I can see why Brighton are keen to keep hold of him. But like you just said, I think he's played every single minute of every game so far, apart from 45 minutes in a cup game. And he's the sort of player we don't want to lose in January. But I think he's played enough games now that Brighton can't really do a lot, really, to ask him to come back in January, because, he's played as many minutes as anybody else in the squad. So I think it's crucial that we keep him, really, because I think he is the rock at the back of the defence at the moment. And to say that he's only a young player, he plays with such maturity that he's been a mentor. If anybody from Brighton is listening at the moment, can I just say that he's not very good and he won't be going back to you, because he's got a lot to learn.
One player, Kevin, that's been linked with a move, not necessarily a move away, but Leeds have been linked with another player in that position, is in goal. Kiko Kassir has been in the headlines for some on-field and off-field reasons that we're not going to get into now. But I saw earlier today that Leeds were being linked with not necessarily a specific name, but a goalkeeper in January. Do you think it's likely that Bielsa will be looking for a new guy in between the sticks in January?
If it does happen and Kassir does get suspended or banned or whatever happens, I think he might be looking for an experienced keeper. I mean, I've heard Rob Green mentioned, but how likely that is, I don't know. I don't even know if he's still interested in playing football at the moment. But it was an interesting thing I read the other week in the local newspaper. But I think he will be looking for a maturer keeper, because the backup to Kassir is fairly young, really. And I think, really, you need somebody who knows the Championship a bit better. And I wouldn't be surprised if things do happen that he will look further afield for a more experienced keeper in January.
And just finally, Kevin, over the last few weeks and months, a lot of Leeds' current players have committed their futures to Leeds, which I was talking to a Burnley guest the other day and talking about the importance of not just bringing in good players but keeping your best players as well. The likes of Calvin Phillips, who's one of the best midfielders in the Championship, he signed a new long-term contract. Mateusz Klich, I see, has signed a new 4.5-year contract in the last week. How crucial has it been for Leeds this season, as they try to get promoted into the Premier League again, that they keep hold of their best players as well as bringing in players like Eddie Nketiah on loan?
I think it's crucial that you keep the experienced players. I mean, Klich, signed a 4.5-year contract. And he's the only player in the squad that's played in every single game under Bielsa. So you can see how highly rated he is by the coach. And I think he'll probably be instrumental in make sure that he keeps him for a long while. And hopefully that'll be the case for maybe a couple of the other experienced players in the team as well. So whilst it's great getting new players in and bringing players through the ranks, it's crucial as well that you keep the players that have got you there, got you up in the league, that you keep them longer than their contracts sort of allow, and you do give them better deals and better contracts. So the clubs in the Premier League don't get tempted to make an offer. So, yeah, I mean, it's crucial that it works both ways, really, and I think we've got it right there.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Kevin. That was Kevin Markey, editor of the Leeds United Mad website. Another good start for Leeds, but they made a similar start last year, if not even better than they have done this season, and it didn't exactly pan out in the way that all Leeds fans would have hoped. Interesting to see what they do in January. Will they look for another goalkeeper? How much investment might they look to do in the January transfer window? It's inevitable that at this stage of the season, when we get into mid-November, people are already talking about what moves that certain clubs might be making in and out. Some clubs will be much more active than others in the January transfer window. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. We want to hear from you this afternoon on your Championship Club. We'll be back after this. Love Sport. So this is obviously the Championship Fan Show up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us, call us on 0208 70 20 558. I mentioned earlier how we're going to be delving more into detail about Sheffield Wednesday, who could be handed a possible points deduction and a significant fine after being charged with a breach of the Football League's financial rules. And I mentioned how earlier on the Breakfast Show with Richard Lee and Patrick Christie's, they were joined by football finance expert Kieran Maguire, who is much better placed to talk about the ins and outs of this potential charge.
They've been charged with irregularities with regards to fair play, going back to 2018 and the sale of Hillsborough to a company called Sheffield 2 Limited, which was set up by the owner, Mr. Chancery.
Okay, so the owner, they related then. So the owner, is he related to both companies? Because I know, am I right in thinking that Derby had something similar? I know Mel Morris came out and was, there were certain issues in regards to a sale of Pride Park, if I remember rightly, but it was to another company that Mel Morris was involved in. Is it a similar situation here?
There are some similarities. Certainly, Mel Morris sold Pride Park to another company that he's owned, and the same thing has happened with Aston Villa as well, and at Reading. So this is a fairly recent phenomenon. I think what's unique with regards to Sheffield Wednesday was that they were very late publishing their accounts, and the company to which the ground has been sold, that company was only set up in June 2019, and yet Wednesday are claiming the sale went through in 2018. And then when you take a look at the sale of the stadium, I think the other query is in relation to the price. Hillsborough was sold for $60 million, but if you compare that to a couple of other transactions, you've got Reading selling the Majeski for $26 million and West Ham selling Upton Park for $40 million. So it seems very odd that Hillsborough, we appreciate it's a fairly big stadium, but it's also old, and it's not in a particularly affluent area of the country property-wise. So why is that being sold at such a significantly higher price than those of the others?
So is it legal is the question, because obviously, the clubs have got to fit within a certain budget bandwidth when it comes to FFP. And naturally, they've got a certain number of assets, whether that's player sales. Another obvious one is, of course, the stadium, which is an asset. So you're only going to be able to do this once, right? You can move it on once. Is it legal? Is it allowed what they've done? If they had have done it in the correct financial year, would it then have been OK?
It's certainly legal from a general law point of view. Under the EFL rules, it wouldn't have been acceptable before 2016, but for reasons the EFL have never explained, they changed the rules in 2016, and that's led to this rush of transactions. If it had taken place in 2018, I suspect there still would have been an investigation because of the price that Sheffield Wednesday are claiming the ground was sold for. Because, again, if you sort of go into the fine print, normally, if you or I sold a house or bought a house, we'd have to pay for it. But the new owners haven't paid for it, and they're paying 8 instalments of £7.5 million over an 8-year period, which is very unusual from a property point of view. So I think all of these sort of little individual red flags have resulted in the EFL taking a harder line and requesting further information. And I think if you actually read the statement that's been published by the EFL, I think they've been a bit disappointed by the information that they've received to date from Wednesday.
Yeah, I suppose even that. So hearing that, so it's split over 8 years, which I guess, again, would then, in theory, mean that Sheffield Wednesday have got a slightly bigger bandwidth than others, certainly over the next 8-year period, because, of course, their amount of income would be that £7.5 million more each year, which in theory, if it is then a gamble to get to the Premier League, which it seems to be, then, of course, I guess if they make the Premier League, the hundreds of millions that will come with it will mean that this then becomes a drop in the ocean. I suppose the problem with it, the worrying thing for me is that with this change in regulations, does that now mean that at some point every club's going to do this? Every club's going to sell what is effectively their biggest asset, which I guess is okay if it's to the owners selling it to themselves to an extent, but also it's not, because then what then happens? I guess the moment the club's then sold, would the stadium then be owned again once again by the club itself? It's all a little bit complicated, it seems.
It is, and if you take a look at some of the previous stadium sales, that has led to the problems. Brighton sold their Goldstone ground in 1997. They ended up homeless. Coventry City are homeless at present, where the stadium and the club become disconnected. So it is a gamble, I agree with you entirely that it's a one-time boost to profits. If Sheffield Wednesday hadn't sold the stadium, I think we probably would have been looking at a minimum of a 12-point penalty. So you can see the reasons behind the sale, but I think that the value of the sale, the sale price, is very concerning. And also these unusual terms that the sale wasn't recorded at the land registry. It was to a company that didn't exist in theory when the date of the sale took place. Clearly, this warrants further investigation from the perspective of the EFL.
And are they likely to receive? You mentioned a potential 12-point deduction. Are they likely to receive a points deduction?
Well, the tariffs available to the EFL are limitless. So it could go anything from a sort of sit on the naughty step. You've been poor with your paperwork. I think that would be delightful from a Wednesday fan's perspective. They could move to a transfer embargo, and Wednesday have had transfer embargoes in the last couple of years, and those aren't ideal, but you can work through them. But I think the precedent was probably set with regards to FFP issues in relation to Birmingham City last season. Now, Birmingham had a 9-point deduction, but their losses were actually lower than those would be undertaken by Wednesday had this transaction not taken place.
Just want to move on to Macclesfield as well. They haven't paid their players last month. Now, the protocol, it seems, for not being able to pay your players is to get a fine, which doesn't necessarily make sense. If they can't afford to pay their players, then getting fines is not necessarily going to help the situation. What's the latest with Macclesfield?
Well, I mean, the Macclesfield Town players have actually sued the club. They were originally refusing to train. I think they are back in training. There were concerns that the club also hadn't paid the insurance policies in respect of the players, which meant that you can understand it from a player's perspective. You don't want to run the risk of getting injured in training or in a match, and therefore make yourself unavailable for a transfer. So the players, from a legal point of view, if they've not been paid, potentially they will then have the right to walk away from the club. So I think Macclesfield are in a very delicate position at present. This has been rumbling on now for over a year. The owner has come out with a few unusual and bizarre statements. At one point in time, he was blaming it on Brexit, which regardless of your views on Brexit, is clearly nonsense, given where Macclesfield is located. So I think it's disappointing what's happened. And I live quite close to Macclesfield, and I know a few Mac fans, and they are worried that they could become the next Bury.
This is Love Sport.